is from the Health and Performance Center over at the hospital. That is the building behind the hospital where physical therapy and all that jazz is, and a bunch of doctor's offices. She is a registered dietitian and nutritionist, and she's going to talk to us about senior nutrition. And, of course, the first thing we want to know is define senior.
Exactly.
And
it has moved
supplements.
Up.
What supplements work for you? What the latest and greatest is, hopefully.
All right. It's always a pleasure to come back and talk with you folks. It at least guarantees me the best meal I will have of the entire week. So thank you very much. Oh, yeah. This is a great sandwich. This was a great sandwich. Anyway. But, indeed, I am an outpatient dietitian over at the hospital. Been in the outpatient arena really since I got here. And I was actually talking this morning to a group of students in a health career class. So I said to them, do any of you know where you're going? And they all looked at me like I said, do you know what mud is or something? They had no clue why they were even in this class. And I've been a dietitian in a sense. I mean, I knew I was going to be a dietitian. By the time I was a senior in high school, we will not tell you how long ago that was. But it was a long time ago, and I mentioned to them how the arena of dietetics has changed. Whereas I was a clinical dietitian for a great many years, inpatient, treating and educating folks who were ill, had diabetes or whatever. And when I moved to St. George, I ended up in the outpatient arena. And even I have been a dietitian here for like 17 years, something very close to that, which is to me quite amazing because I was a dietitian a long time in California also. And even in the time that I've been here, the role of the outpatient dietitian has changed. It's allowed me to come out and talk to you folks. I was just talking to the folks at the table, and my job right now is sort of to keep you out of the hospital. Don't quote me, but my job... The hospital loves your business. But my job is to keep you well. I want you to eat well. I want you to be physically active. I want to keep you out of the hospital. So how do we do that these days? And as I look around the room, I'm seeing a very healthy group of seniors, a really good group of seniors here. And I'm using that term according to AARP, which I think once you hit 50, you are considered a senior in the eyes of AARP or something darn close. Yeah, I was getting their stuff, I think, when I was 49. I was like, this is an insult. But apparently, they are still early recruiting. So I don't think I will define senior. My feeling right now is I've gotten older. The term senior has also gone up in years. You know, if you're 90 or over, you are a senior citizen. The rest of us are still kind of middle-aged, the way I'm looking at it. So as I look at nutrition, I throw out the question, as we get older, are there any nutrients we no longer need? No. The human body has a basic need of well over 40 nutrients, and that's not including the phytonutrients that we're talking about, but our need for the nutrients doesn't go away. We still need to be looking at being well-fed and getting these 40 or more nutrients, not necessarily on a daily basis. Some we don't need because we have a tendency to store some, but we do need them for life. Now, on the other side of the coin here, does our need for calories change as we get older? You bet it does. And I always ask, what came first? Did we have to reduce our calories and we became less active? Or did we become less active and therefore have to reduce our calories? One of those is right. I'm not sure which one. It just kind of happens. The nice ideal balance is as we mature and we get past that active 40s and early 50s and now probably up to the 60s, we start to slow down. I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. Maybe some of you are the exception to the rule. But we tend to slow down as we get a little older. And so the natural progression is that our caloric intake also decreases. Now, many of us have seen where that doesn't happen. Oops, We're still eating like we were a teenager, and there are some folks out there that didn't get that word that some of our intake should start to reduce a little bit. So I want to talk a little bit about basic nutrition. It does kind of fall off to the side, so if you can't hear me, you know, throw a cookie at me or something. I'll try to catch it. I am still a fan, don't tell Michelle Obama, I am still a fan of the pyramid. And so you have a copy of Tufts Pyramid for Older Adults. It is based still on the pyramid that was in existence a couple of years ago. And the reason I still come back to this pyramid is when I look at a plate that is divided into quarters, it doesn't really tell me what I need to eat. It tells me the portions of what should be on the plate, but it really isn't conveying to me, wow, do you need carrots every day or just a couple times a week? Can I get by with meat twice a day, three times a day, none a day? It doesn't convey the need for nutrients. That's my interpretation. Certainly a lot of folks love the plate for, portion control, but I find the pyramid still telling me a little bit more about what I need to eat and why. So as we look at this pyramid, and again, there are some things that this pyramid does differently than the old pyramid. When we look at basic nutrition, and I have to tell you, the actual food group idea goes back to the turn of the 20th century. It was in the early 1900s when our food groups first kind of got formulated. So they have been around a long time, have taken many forms. When we look at the regular diet, most of you are on a regular diet, what do we usually consume for energy?
Sugar.
Carbs. Carbs, I'll take sugar. We need, our basic need for energy still is about half of the calories we consume. Whether we're eating 1,800 calories or 1,500 calories, we need about half of those calories for energy, for me to walk around the room, digest my food, even just to stay alive, basic metabolic needs. The carbs, which you're seeing not at the base of this pyramid, but actually the next step up, when we say carbs, and many of you ladies will probably know this, what do you drop out of the diet when you're trying to lose weight?
Bread.
The base of the pyramid, the staff of life, we drop the carbs out of our diet. And then we expect to be energized and go walking and do the treadmill. And in the meantime, we're not eating anything. We're not getting that energy. So that if I look at the bread group, and the basic minimum is about 6 per day. But now we're looking at some different characteristics, if you will, of this bread group. What does the government say? Oh, the government. The government has had a hand in what we eat, whether you like it or not. We have U.S. dietary guidelines. The recommendation these days is at least 50% of your grains are what? Whole grain. Brown rice, whole grain pasta, bread with twigs and sticks and nuts and sesame seeds and then getting that roughage in there. Now, I'm going to tell you, not into a lot of detail, but whole grain does not equal fiber, correct? Correct. Oh, yes, indeed. When it says whole grain, and a lot of you are probably shopping these days and you're seeing that little staff of wheat on the package, that is going to indicate the whole grain content. And that is a great consumer guideline to let you know that this has so much whole grain in it. Now, fiber is just a portion of that whole grain. If I looked at a kernel of wheat, there's the bran, the germ, and what they call the endosperm. When it says whole grain, all of that got thrown in and used for the product. If you're buying a bread with whole grain, for example, they use the entire piece of wheat, the entire kernel. The fiber actually comes from just the bran, which encompassed the little grain. So whole grain means I use the whole thing. Fiber means I've got that bran in there. So you're going to see whole grain maybe 16 grams per piece of bread or something. But you're only going to see 3 grams of fiber. So there's definitely a difference. We still want to look for whole grains, but we also want to look for fiber. And our bread group, when we drop out the carbs, that second one up on that pyramid, many of us lose what? Fiber. And many of us, when we lose fiber in our intake, we may suffer some other consequences. And as we get older, we tend to suffer that one a little bit more. So fiber is extremely important. And we get most of our fiber, or a great deal of it, from the whole grains, whether it's whole grain cereal, whole grain bread, even to the point, whole grain crackers, brown rice, whole grain pasta. It's out there. We don't need to be afraid of consuming carbohydrates. Am I telling you to eat half a pizza because it was made on whole grain crust? No. But I'm sorry. I don't want you to do that. But I am saying, look, if you've got a sandwich, have 2 pieces of bread. You know, it doesn't have to be triple thick bread. We're only talking the half inch slice. But get some fiber. Get some whole grain with that sandwich. Again, minimum 6 servings a day. Half of them are going to be whole grain. As we move up that pyramid, you can see again the fruits and the vegetables come into play. This is fairly typical. When we look at the fruits and vegetables, again, the main nutrient we're getting here is carbohydrate. Now, one of the things that's happened with our fruits and vegetables, and this is somewhat reflected on that plate version of eating, is we have gone from 5 a day to 9 a day, basically. The more, the merrier. So if you are cooking for yourself or you're having a nice lunch, even at breakfast, I'll tell you how, getting fruits and vegetables literally every meal. Now, when we say 9 servings, we're not saying, yes, I ate a grapefruit, that's 1. I ate a cantaloupe, that's 2. I ate 5 crowns of broccoli, that's 3. Our servings are considered, roughly speaking, half cup to 1 cup, depending on what the item is. But 9 a day. So how many of you are getting 5 fruits and vegetables a day? This is a good group. 5, at least 5 a day. That is great. So then we up the ante. How many are getting 9? Woo, we've got 1. All right. Absolutely. Now, you know, if anybody is eating vegetarian, they've got a leg up on the competition, so to speak. They're getting plenty most of the time, but even they get their starches. Now, what else do we get from the fruits and vegetables?
Fiber.
Fiber, absolutely. We get some natural fruit sugar from the fruits itself. We get a lot of things called phytochemicals. And in the realm of nutrition, this is a relatively new kid on the block. We may have known, oh, there's other things in fruits and vegetables besides vitamins and minerals and fiber. But until fairly recent in the research history, we didn't know what they were. So we started digging, and we started isolating compounds in fruits and vegetables. And we are now finding that many, and actually most, have some kind of distinct role in the body. We find them related to eyesight, to fighting cancers, to being antioxidants, anti-inflammatory. Lots of talk these days about anti-inflammatory eating, certainly antioxidants. We get bazillions from our fruits and vegetables. Vitamin C, vitamin A, there's a mineral out there called selenium, really big in vegetables. We are getting these from that group. So here again, as adults, we're like, we eat a fairly good diet. We get our fruits and vegetables. I look at kids, and you say, well, do you eat any vegetables? And they look at you like you're nuts. They don't eat anything green. I've had people come in, I don't eat vegetables. Oh, excuse me, I eat corn and potatoes. Oh, okay. And peas, yeah. Peas, I can actually give peas a little more credit on occasion. But, you know, typically, if you ask, well, I shouldn't say, but I've asked a lot of men what their favorite vegetables are. One, we've got a couple of broccolis. Potatoes. Cauliflower. It's still white. Green beans. I usually get the corn and potatoes as my favorite. Those are not green. We tend to, they're still in the vegetable family, but they don't have that nutritional punch that we'd really like them to have. So broccoli, fabulous. How many are eating things like Swiss chard and kale chips and what is that one I'm thinking? Rantini. Turnip greens. Oh, we had, I will tell you, they served greens the other day in the hospital a couple of weeks ago. I'm brave. I'm going to try these greens. They were really green. They were bitter. They got bitter. They did, yeah. I can do the Swiss chard, but these greens were like, holy smokes. Swiss chard. And many of you probably grow those in this area. Wonderful. Doesn't have any great claim to fame, but it's got fiber. It's a nice vegetable. There's not a lot out there that we can't eat. I don't know. I go to, Costco certainly has a great display of high-end produce. Really nice stuff at Costco. I mean, they're getting berries right now that look fabulous. If you want a wide variety choice, have any of you ever perused Harmon's produce section?
Yes. Oh,
they have got like 5 colors of beets. Who knew? I'm like, okay. And then they've got like the red chard and the orange chard, and I don't know if they're what they're doing to this. And then a lot of folks, how many grow their own gardens? A couple people grow their own gardens. The big push right now is heirloom vegetables. Heirloom tomatoes. There's. Yep. Yeah. There are companies now that are actually growing the heirloom beans, the heirloom tomatoes. There's actually an heirloom potato. They're out there. Squashes, things that we don't routinely eat. So branch out. If you have nothing to do, start a vegetable garden. Get some weird seeds. See what comes out of them. And let's, if you grow your own, you're more likely to eat them. And sometimes we get so good, we give them to our neighbors. So, get friendly with somebody who's got a good garden going. The heirlooms mean that they're more ancient and they have not, if you will, been genetically modified. So I always tell a story about a tomato. Tomato is part of the
fruits,
but it's also part of the deadly nightshade.
It is,
which, of course, we all know was inedible.
Yeah.
It's inedible. So over the course of many, many, many years and selective crossbreeding, they ended up with a fruit, the tomato was a fruit, that's edible. So if we go back several generations, we're going to get a tomato that, was like, whoa, this was like the first or second tomato we ever got after getting it out of the deadly nightshade group. So we go back. Are there some nutritional advantages? I don't think so, very honestly. If there were, that wouldn't be very great. Yes. Wow. Well, let's look at yellow grape tomatoes. Really? Where did those come from? I don't think that was a natural occurring tomato a couple of years ago. Yeah, picked too early. Yeah. Indeed. Didn't even get to the green stage. So coming on back to the fruits and vegetables, we tend to give the nod toward the vegetables. And certainly, they do tend to be a little more mineral-containing. I can certainly point to a lot of fruits that are great for vitamin C, some of the vegetables. But our vegetables tend to have more phytonutrients. They tend to have more minerals, a little bit better picture in the big picture. How do I get vegetables at breakfast?
In an omelet.
Get your fruit there, absolutely. How many like V8 juice, the unsalted variety? Great, easy. Notice I had to qualify that. When we talk these days, it's loaded with salt. But V8 juice, tomato juice, carrot juice. Blend your own juice in the morning with those fresh vegetables. Easy way to get a vegetable, at least at breakfast. It's probably a modified carbohydrate is what it's doing.
Would that be better for you than a
My two cents?
Than
no.
A
Nope. Just an aside, the low glycemic index has been around quite a while, and it has been tested in a lot of different scenarios, diabetes, weight loss, a couple of others, and you get mixed results. It never really comes to the top saying, wow, if you eat low glycemic, you are going to avoid diabetes, lose weight, you know, have great blood sugars, low, reduced insulin resistance. It really doesn't come to the top. On top of that, it's a tough diet to follow. You've got to have the numbers and the books and the charts and figure out your glycemic index, add them up, come up with your glycemic load, go back and balance it. It's not worth it. Yes, if you have nothing else to do, you can try to eat low glycemic. Absolutely. I have found it, I just haven't found it useful in what I do, very honestly. If somebody wants to pursue it, by all means, give it a try. But it really hasn't come to the top as a generally accepted, if you will, therapeutic approach to controlling weight, diabetes, blood sugars, whatever.
So you'd just be better off get your whole wheat.
Get some whole grain pasta. Cover it with marinara sauce. Nobody will know. Well, they will. But anyway. So fruits and vegetables, we moved on up. The goal, 4.5 cups a day. 4.5 cups of fruits and vegetables a day. As we move back up the pyramid, which really hasn't changed, here again we've got the meat and the milk. These have been taking a much lesser role for a very long time, unless you were an advocate of the Atkins diet, in which case meat was your entire pyramid and vegetables were up at the very tip. In general, the U.S. government feels that we do not need to eat as much meat as we did, if you will, when we lived in the 50s, where your neighbors came over, everybody had a 12-ounce steak, and that was per person. So we've gone from this meat-oriented intake, and it's gotten smaller and smaller and smaller and more expensive. Boy, isn't that the truth. Maybe that's why the portions have gotten smaller, so we don't have to pay. We just don't have to pay as much. The recommendation, of course, is 3-ounce portions twice a day. It's about 6 ounces. I've got some pyramids with nutrient recommendations that go as low as 5 ounces of meat per day. Wow, that's a pork chop. Yeah. So I tend not to eat that little as far as meat goes. Now, one of the interesting things they've done with seniors, and as they've observed us, is they looked at the recommendation of protein, which is, in technical terms, 0.8 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight, or 1.6 grams per pound. And they looked at this very basic recommendation, and then they did studies on seniors. And they found that if seniors consumed this absolute low end of protein, the rate of muscle loss increased. When they came up with this 0.8, the population they looked at was college seniors or something back in the 50s, not applicable to seniors. So when we look at the senior intake, going down to this little tiny 5 to 6 ounces of meat per day, and then if you top that with the fact that you may not be consuming dairy because you're lactose intolerant, your protein intake was not enough to prevent rapid muscle deterioration, which we call sarcopenia. So I am a fan of a little more meat in the diet. You know, have 3 ounces on your sandwich. Have an egg for breakfast, maybe 2 on the weekends. And if you sit down to have dinner at night and all you've got in front of you is that little deck of cards, 5 bites of steak, all right, do a double deck, okay? Increase it a little bit, because we actually do have a need for protein as we get older to slow down this natural deterioration of our muscles. Very quickly, what would help me maintain my muscle mass?
Exercise.
Exercise. What kind?
Weight bearing.
Swimming will help. It is actually, you're putting some stress against the bones. The best thing is what we call the resistance exercise. Get yourself some weights. Do some body weight, using your body as the weight, doing some resistance exercises. Resistance bands, one of the easiest ways to do it. What? Oh, is there a class here for? No. There we go. Bands, hands, weights. Absolutely. There you go. You walking is great. If you look at again AARP, my Bible, so to speak. Not really. They're saying 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week is all you need to do. Now, the assumption there is you're already fit and you're in a maintenance stage. Nothing else going on. I tell people, if you walk the Chihuahua every morning for 15 minutes, yay, you're in motion. But get yourself a dog that's going to give you a little bit of a challenge, okay? Get the German Shepherd on the leash and head on out. Yeah, so... No. Oh, God, no. Put the dog in the doggy park. You're on your own, sweetie.
I never saw that happen until I moved here to Utah. And you see the red cliffs. And it's Zion. You see it down on Harrison down there.
They sit in the car and put their dogs in the dog park?
Yes.
I will tell you, I was out, this was probably a year ago, and I'm driving down 700 South, and the lady had her little red wagon. And in the red wagon was the cat, in the cat carrier, and she was taking the cat for a walk. Now, the cat wasn't moving, she was moving, yay, but that cat was in the box, in the wagon, going for a ride, a little fresh air for the cat.
I got a better one, Christy. I live in Sun River, 55. Yep.
You're in the golf cart. Get on a bike. I agree. Leave your iPod in the house and take the dog out and enjoy the sounds and the smells. But absolutely, the protein, as I said, as you look at the pyramid, could be a little on the light side for our seniors. So up it a little bit. Don't be afraid to eat the entire chicken breast. Now, again, we're not still talking about there's that 12-ounce porterhouse 3 days a week. That's a little on the overkill side. But you can go beyond that 3 ounces and feel pretty good about it. Now, if you're not a milk drinker, which is in the next cubicle over from the meat, you really do need to eat a little bit of extra meat because we are relying on that animal-based protein intake to allow us to make the proteins that our body needs. So the part of the assumption, if you will, with the dairy and the meat being so small is that between the two, you're going to get more protein. Now, how many are getting 3 glasses of milk per day, or the equivalent? 1, 2, very good, couple. Okay.
My wife and I will drink a gallon of milk a day.
Oh, I was going to say a day, whoa. Now, if you can still tolerate milk or yogurt, by all means do. Now, the recommendation almost across the board for all ages is 3 servings a day. Are they looking at protein or calcium? They're actually looking at calcium, they being the government. From a natural intake source, you can't beat dairy for calcium.
What about these fake milks?
They are actually okay if you are lactose intolerant, but they are okay from the calcium standpoint. Many of them are going more calcium than a glass of milk, more calcium than a glass of milk. If you look at the protein content, it's like zippity-doo-dah. They're down there at 1 or 2 grams. And a glass of milk will give you about 8. And if you're doing Greek yogurt, a couple of people doing the Greek yogurt, Chobani's, the Foggy up at whatever. Oh, it's loaded. What a great way to get calcium and protein There's other forms. You can do peanut butter. That's one thing. You can do some of the what we call meat analogs. There's some soybean things. Also, quinoa. I don't know if any of you guys have tried quinoa.
Yes.
One of the best protein profiles and better content than a lot of the other grains. Quinoa is actually a berry off of some quinoa berry bush. I quite honestly have never seen it grown, but I know that it comes in red and white. You can get red quinoa. And it's a grain. And, you know, we're trying to get into heirloom grains and things that we're not used to eating, and it's one of those. But it really isn't a grain. Quinoa is that Q-U-I-N-O-A. It looks like quinoa. You bet. They bounce it up to $3 a box just because it's rare. So, but you can get quinoa. You can get protein from other sources. When we look at protein, generally speaking, the more complete proteins, what we call high biological value, come from our animal sources. So if we are consuming animal-sourced protein, we're getting all the proteins we need to make the other proteins in the body. When we look at getting them from vegetable sources, we sometimes have to get a little creative and matching up proteins and so forth. There actually is a science behind eating vegetarian because you do want to make sure you're getting the complement of amino acids you need to formulate the other proteins in the body. So dairy, absolutely, if you can. If you can't, there are dairy substitutes. And if you can't do those, we'll talk supplements here in just a minute. So at the very top of the pyramid, and we will get into the supplements here in just a moment, what's at the very bottom of the pyramid?
Water.
The USDA pyramid did not include water. Tufts does. Why? Hydration.
It looks like fireweed.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
she found
like
it. Let's hear it for iPhones and
it's
smartphones.
It's actually a goosefoot.
It's a what?
Goosefoot.
A weed?
Yep.
Okay. So there's this weed that grows, it's used good. To grow. It does. It tastes good. How many have heard of amaranth?
I've heard of it.
Amaranth. Amaranth is another weird grain that's out there. It's from a weed. It's kind of a seed. I used to call it lamb's quarters. I think it's the same thing. And we called it a stinking weed. It was a weed. And you'd yank it out, and it had roots this long. And, oh, yeah, well, you can eat that. Oh, okay, great. So I haven't quite gotten that far to harvest the weeds from my yard and create something. But you can. There's some great plant it in rows. This is my lamb quarters. Here's my quinoa. Here's my, I don't know what else I would grow. Well, wild asparagus. There you go. Well, somebody must be doing it because they're able to sell it in bags now. So we know somebody's growing weird weeds to get it out there. Anyway, water. We've got to have water. If you are trying to get adequate fiber in the diet, you absolutely have to have adequate water. In this drier climate also, we need the water. And you'll notice on the bottom, I think it's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's 8 8-ounce glasses a day. We have not really varied much from that recommendation. Now, there are occasions where the physician may say they want you to consume less water. Certainly some medical conditions would warrant that. For most of us, we get out there and we need to be consuming. Does juice count as part of your fluid intake? It actually is water. They do count. Coffee counts, especially if you're a long-term coffee drinker. That does count. If I said, okay, what's a better hydrator, coffee or water?
Water.
Right. Yes, you have a tendency to lose some of that coffee if you're not a consistent coffee drinker. Okay. But all fluid counts. But water actually, if you will, comes to the top as the best hydrator. So we want to make sure we're getting plenty of water. So let's talk about the very tip of this pyramid here. And lo and behold, I think it's kind of pointing to the flag on the top of the pyramid. Up here at the very top, trans fatty acids, you know, desserts there at the very tip. You can still eat them. We don't push them a lot. I am going to have all those cookies thrown out before I go because we don't eat those things, do we? I did notice they were frosted with green, which I guess is St. Patrick's Day. Okay, anyway, that's okay. I, you know, sweets, How many of you like sweets? Occasional. You know, chocolate chip cookies have been around forever. Everybody likes. Every little boy. We like our homemade cookies. So, do they fit into a food group? No. They're kind of bonus calories. And I do look at them. If you can afford to eat the bonus calories, enjoy a cookie. Does it say you eat the entire box of Girl Scout Thin Mints when they come in? No. No, you don't. Everything in moderation. You know, even for the rare people who put real butter on their baked potato. It's okay on occasion. You know what? I'm not consuming a half a pound of butter over the course of the week. I only use it in very small amounts. I also know where my cholesterol is. But generally speaking, you know, when margarine came out, for example, it was like, you know, we'd been consuming hard fats, butter fat. And we found out that, indeed, it was linked to cardiovascular disease. Now we've got margarine. I think we were talking about it at this table. It's like a tub of plastic. You can't pronounce half the words on the label. And it's like, do I use this? Or do I go back and use my favorite butter in moderation? You know? And there's, you know, I'm speaking heresy here, I guess. So I'm like, yeah, if you use a little bit of butter, it's probably okay. I tried to cook an egg the other day, and I took my plastic margarine and put it in the pan and watched it melt into water and some yellow substance. And I looked at it, and it really hit me at that point that, you know, I recommend this to people. I recommend that you put this weird substance. It was actually smart balance. It turns to water, which boils off, if you will, and you're left with this yellow stuff. And so, okay, but anyway, so I'm like, you know what? There's a cube of butter in there. I'm doing that anyway. Or use the nonstick pan. Anyway, let's talk supplements here for just a minute. So how many are on a generic or a broad-based multivitamin supplement with minerals? Take one every day. You know, what is it, Men's Health or one a day for seniors or something like that? Can you be well fed by eating through the pyramid recommendations and consuming a wide variety of fruits, vegetables, grains, and so forth? Can you be well fed? Can you get all your nutrients? Yes, you can. You can. So why do we take a multivitamin mineral supplement? We don't always eat right. It's that little insurance policy that I've got going over here. We know, and this is one of those items now that's getting a lot of controversy. We've got studies coming out saying, hey, look, they don't prevent you from getting any disease. Supplements do not prevent you from a disease, but they are that little insurance. Now, what is out there is that as we get older, and some of you may be experiencing this, we do not produce as much stomach acid, which means that we may not absorb all the B12 that we need. And so it is not uncommon to find older folks deficient in vitamin B12. Your doctor, you know, oh, I'm just sluggish, I'm run down, I just don't have any energy. So he might check your vitamin B12 and find that it's low, in which case he would recommend a supplement. Would I automatically take a vitamin B12 supplement? I probably wouldn't. But if I knew I was low, I would, and it does happen. Red meat is a great source. Animal proteins, again, absolutely. When we talk about vitamin D, now vitamin D, yes, take a week, a 12-ounce porterhouse. That's my vitamin B12. That's why I eat red meat. Man, yeah. So vitamin D, where do I usually get vitamin D? Sunshine. So I'm reading this thing, And the observation was in the winter months that people above the 35th parallel, which actually runs mid-Arizona, may not be getting enough sun exposure to make their vitamin D. Now, again, one of the recommendations is stand out without sunscreen and without long sleeves on to get some real sunlight, 10 minutes a day. Get out there, okay, I'm making my vitamin D, let's do this. Not enough to burn. Certainly you don't want to go out at, 1 o'clock in the middle of summer and stand out there. But vitamin D can be made through the sun. And if we are outside, you're out there in the garden, do a little bit of it without putting on your sunscreen and your sun hat and make your vitamin D. Pardon? Yes, he would prefer that he'd probably prefer SPF 50 on every inch of our bodies, actually. He's a big, yeah. 10 minutes a day, not so much, really in the summer months. But here again, here's a vitamin that if we're not consuming dairy products and getting enough sun, we may be deficient in vitamin D. Now, they've upped the recommendation. I believe it was 4. Now it's up to 6. It was not as high as a lot of research would have liked it. But it did bump up, not to the point that getting it from the foods we eat is impossible.
The last bottle I get is D3.
D3.
What's this? How come they've changed?
Vitamin D comes in a lot of varieties. There's actually there's a D2. I think it's called a hydroxycalciferol B. That's a vitamin D. It's like a 25 at the bottom. It's what the lab checks. We actually have a couple of different forms. And what the sunshine does, it converts the precursor that's in our skin to the form that we can actually use. So let's hear it for sunshine. I do not recommend tanning beds as a source of vitamin D. Okay, those are out. So get outside or eat your vitamin D. So vitamin D is one that we are possibly at risk for low intake and low levels. Vitamin B12, also one that we are potentially at risk for low production and absorption. What about calcium? Do we need it? That's true. We don't truly need milk, but we need the calcium and the vitamin D that we get from it. So I can get my protein from, like I said, from meat, whatever. But we don't have a great source of natural occurring calcium. I get some from broccoli. I get some from navel oranges. Is it 1,200 milligrams a day? I'd have to eat pounds of broccoli, and then there'd probably be some consequences to that. A lot of fiber. Well, too much fiber there. So what about calcium? Well, oh, man, I'm lactose intolerant. I don't like soy milk. I don't like coconut milk. I don't like almond milk. There's another one out there called hemp milk, which I've not tried or even seen. I don't know how they use that hemp. I really don't, because it means a lot of stuff. They make rope out of it, but anyway. Don't drink it. You'll get the munchies. Okay. There's a lot of milks out there, but they are fortifying them with calcium, not as we just mentioned with the protein. So if you're not getting calcium through your food sources, you indeed need to take a calcium supplement. So the recommendation again, 3 500s, one at breakfast, lunch, and dinner if you have to take a supplement. You can if you have certain metabolic conditions, and the doctor would have to actually help you analyze that. Some people do. Some people get it from chocolate, peppers, certain foods. Yeah, chocolate unfortunately falls on that list for GERD for some reason. I don't know why, but it does. But those are the three that I find as far as actual nutrients that are the most concerned. The vitamin D, our calcium, and our B12. The rest were pretty good. I can get vitamin C, all the fruits and vegetables I consume, great for vitamin C, my carrots, my yellow squash, my yams, great for vitamin A. Your B vitamins are out there in grain products. Iron is out there in grain products, another reason to, allow grains in the diet, and certainly a little bit of red meat. Absolutely. They're certainly fallen from the wayside. We used to see liver out there. You can get a little pint container of chicken livers every once in a while. I don't find liver anywhere. You know what I'm seeing now? Heart. Okay, sliced beef heart. Not my cup of tea. Okay, not going to be hard-pressed for that one. So I don't find liver anymore. But then if you start thinking about what it really does, people go, oh, I don't think I'm going to eat that. But it was a great source for iron. So is blackstrap molasses, by the way, which I'm, again, not going to be consuming. Yeah, gingerbread. So sorghum and blackstrap molasses for iron. Yeah.
What do you recommend as a calcium supplement?
500 milligrams three times a day. So it can be in a chew. It can be a gummy. It can be just a hard tablet. It can be liquid. Have any of you tasted liquid calcium? Tastes like liquid chalk. Did you find one that's good? Okay. Easy to take in, boom, it's already liquid form, it goes right in. The one I tasted was a little chalky. So.
What about the different types of calcium? You've got calcium carbonate, calcium citrate.
Gluconate, yeah. The calcium citrate is the easiest digested. The ones, the plain old calcium, you know, buy 1,000 for $5, that's the calcium, I think it's the gluconate, it still dissolves. You still, you know, it has to pass solubility tests, but they say it's the toughest one to finally break down and absorb. Pretty much. Oyster shell. Now, how many are buying? Anybody buying coral calcium?
No.
Okay, good, because no advantage there. Yeah, and it's destroying the, you know, the coral beds and all this happy stuff. You know, it's an odd thing. The only way you can really tell that you're low in calcium is when you are diagnosed with osteoporosis. Because your body will take the calcium from your bones in order to keep the blood level at a certain level. So if the doctor looked at your lab work and said, well, your calcium's within normal limits, you could still be losing bone and calcium.
They call it bone density.
They call it bone density, and there's actually a scale. You can get a DEXA scan. It gets worse, yeah. And again, what's going to help keep that calcium in the bones? Vitamin D, calcium, vitamin K, and weight-bearing exercise. You have to pound the pavement.
I did that with my head.
Well, probably not the best choice of... Yes, ma'am. Again, as we... That and actually bone health. Actually, vitamin K is very involved in the formation of bone. That's why some of them actually have the vitamin K in there. I don't remember the exact what the recommendation is on the K, to be very honest. We get K from fruits and vegetables, but you will find some of the calcium supplements also including the D and the K because of the role in bone formation. Yeah, vitamin K has to do with that also. Yeah, if you've got clotting issues, you're not going to be taking a whole lot of vitamin K.
You can increase the warfarin.
Here's the classic war. The pharmacist says, okay, I don't want you eating anything green because we've got you on Coumadin. And the dietitian's going, no, I want you to eat green stuff. Let the pharmacist adjust your Coumadin.
That's what I told him when I had my hip replacement was, I'm going to eat broccoli, so you figure out
what you figure out, exactly. I'm not going to take the green stuff out of my diet because I'm on Coumadin. You can figure out. This is my routine intake. You figure it out. So a little bit of a war going on there. So that's pretty much it for senior nutrition. I use that term senior very loosely because I think you're all very young at heart and certainly young in presentation here and very active. Any other questions? Oh, selenium and manganese, magnesium, copper. What else is out there? We are loaded with minerals. And again, if we're plant consumers, we are going to get adequate minerals, calcium being the exception, iron possibly the exception. Our need for iron actually gets decreased as we get a little bit older. But most of our what I call trace minerals, these are those things that we see on the table of the elements. We don't need great amounts, and it's very difficult to be actually deficient in a mineral, especially if we're eating fruits and vegetables. Anything else? Well, thank you. Thank you very much for allowing me to come speak with you.
So there's a few cookies left, a few potato chips. I'll leave and you guys can finish that up.